Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly. Today we talk ours. Rooney taming the Tigers. Ronaldo now with broken nose, although thankfully not his own. And Robinho, Premier League's biggest signing ever, calls it a day. There's more, like the Carling Cup Manchester Derby's second leg. If Gary Neville's a sock sucker, does that mean he'll taste defeat this Wednesday? Or has Tevez put his foot in his mouth? The pod decides. Plus, an FA Cup review. The Milan Derby, racist dogs in Angola, dwarves in eggs, your posts and much, much more in today's Football Weekly. Excellent. And on board the Football Weekly vessel today, potentially incendiary combination of Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
And Barney Rone, the sort of Tevez and Neville, really, of podcasting. And
Hello.
Hi, Barney, how are you?
I'm giving him the finger as we speak.
They're like fire and ice.
I'm demanding more respect.
And the man who's kind of like lukewarm water in between, Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean, lovely to see you. And a vintage lineup today, a vintage in the sense that it would probably be best treated lying down in a cold, dark place. Everybody's, Barry, you're suffering from, what are you suffering from?
Well, I'm suffering from having had a couple of Irish mates over for the weekend going to the rugby, and we may have overindulged slightly.
Right. And Barney?
I've just got the shivers and the shakes. I'm breathing germs into people's ears.
Right.
Thanks. You're not feeling well either, Jim, are you?
I'm feeling terrific. I'm just hungry to get on with the week's podcasting, and so much to talk about. But we could start with another place where fevers are building, and that's Manchester, ahead of the second leg of the Carling Cup semi-final. And Manchester United arriving on a high, of course. Their 4-0 victory over Hull. Wayne Rooney, 4 goals from him. Quick comment on Wayne Rooney, Sean?
I think he is probably going to be a shoo-in now for Player of the Year. Perhaps unfairly, just because it's a World Cup year, and knowing the people that vote, i.e. English journalists, will probably vote for an English player, and I think they will, with Lampard perhaps not having his best season and Gerrard being very fitful.
I think it's Fabregas right now, isn't it?
I'm not saying he's the best player.
But, I mean, in terms of player of the year, I mean, in terms of being the best player.
I think Drogba might have a case as well, but I would not be surprised at all if Rooney gets it, because they'll be voting quite soon as well. So
19 goals in 21 appearances.
19 league goals.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not bad. That's very, very impressive. Barry, would you make him player of the year, would you?
I don't know. I think he's probably more important to Manchester United than Fabregas is to Arsenal.
Ooh, don't know about that. Fabregas is very, very, I mean, he's their man. Well, they're both very important to their team.
Call him a sock sucker. Well, terrific stuff, and it'll be interesting to see what he and his United teammates can do in this return leg of the Carling Cup semi-final against City, who meanwhile themselves scored 4 goals on the weekend, away at Scunthorpe, including what could be Robinho's last goal for the Eastlands outfit. He has told a City he's leaving, and apparently a move back to Santos, back in Brazil, is on the cards. It's an extraordinary finish to his time with Manchester City after that, what was it, £32, £34 million transfer? Biggest signing ever in the Premier League.
£32.5 million.
Thank you.
It's a Premier League record.
It is, okay. Away he goes, back to Brazil. And no other big club in Europe was willing to make the sacrifices to bring him on board. How is this scene back in Brazil, we wondered. And the man to ask, of course, is Fernando Duarte. Fernando.
Hey, Jimbo, how are you?
I'm very well, Fernando. How is the reaction to this news about Robinho?
Funny thing is, there's a mixed reaction, which is quite hard to explain. The first immediate reaction is, oh, cool, one of our stars is actually coming back to play in the Brazilian Championship. So basically, Robinho will be joining the likes of Adriano, of Wagner Love, and some old-timers like Roberto Carlos and Ronaldo. So for the Brazilian sports press, it's fantastic that we get all these guys together. It's going to increase the attention, the value of the Brazilian Championship. Of course, people haven't forgot to notice that he flopped in England after being the most expensive signing, which basically is going to keep on feeding this feeling and this myth, in my opinion, that Brazilians cannot adapt to the Premiership.
Is it seen as his fault or English football's fault?
I think it's his fault. Robinho has been in criticism. I mean, at least from what I've been talking to my colleagues during the national team tweet, people have kind of lost a bit of patience with him. I mean, he's always been this guy that was supposed to be a dazzler, and he's failed to actually live to expectations. I don't know if we put expectations too high, but when he came through the Santos ranks and he won that Brazilian championship with Diego, you know, Alex now in Chelsea, Elano, you know, there was a lot of hope that this guy would be a new dazzler, and he kind of failed to emulate that. He had a kind of a weird career at Real Madrid, forced his movement out, which wasn't where we all perceived in Brazil. People say, oh, come on, man, you got to grow up if you want to play in Europe. And in England, I mean, although he had this fantastic start with 11, 12 goals, pretty soon he disappeared. So people were talking like, well, you know, this could jeopardize his World Cup plan, especially with Neymar now coming through the ranks, scoring goals, including again the one against England in Qatar. So basically people are seeing that as good for the Brazilian championship, but also as a kind of, you know, desperate attempt of Robinho to actually show some skills and some flair.
Fernando, will Robinho be welcome back at Santos? Because I think he left under something of a cloud, did he?
Well, some of the ultras complained that he kind of like held the club hostage, demanded the move. But the thing is, some people in Brazil still complain when the guys go away. They still think of the players as supposed to show some kind of patriotism, when basically since the 80s we've been having flocks of players just leaving. Well, some people might complain, some ultras might boo him, but I'm pretty sure that the majority will actually welcome him, especially because Santos didn't do anything special in the last season, and you know it would be important for the team to have a big name, a big signing. It can also inspire the other two guys there.
What's the word on the deal that Man City will get out of this? Are they going to get first dibs on hot young prospects or what?
Well, I think the wage demands will have to be negotiated as well. Robinho earns a fortune in England, and that's not at all the kind of wage that people pay in Brazil. The first dibs thing is quite normal. You know, it would be quite interesting to see if City actually exert this power. I know that Neymar, one of the players they're looking for, the young players, a very good striker, has been branded a kind of a new Robinho because of his style. Ganso is a good midfielder who sometimes lacks a bit of bottle. He missed two penalties in the same game during the last Brazilian championship. He's quite skillful. He's one of the guys people in Brazil say, well, we must pay attention to this one. This one will go places. Right. I won't be surprised if they have some kind of agreement, because City is definitely losing money in this one, aren't they?
Well, definitely. Although whether they want either of those two players, if one of them is the new Robinho and the other one lacks a bit of bottle, is open to question. That's fantastic.
They're young, James. They're young.
Nice one, Fernando. There you go. Interesting to compare him to that other South American who's always kind of getting the hump and making moves to other clubs for big money. Tevez, are his words going to come back and bite him this week, do you think? Is he going to be able to live up to all the storm and the hype that he's brought to this kind of inter-game period?
It's a tricky one, because Fergus is talking about possibly not fielding a particularly strong team because United are playing Arsenal at the weekend. So, you know, City might well be able to scrape a draw from that and get through to their first final for many a year.
You think United will not be playing a full...
Well, that's what Ferguson has hinted that at the weekend.
Hard to see him letting this opportunity to go by.
He may change his mind on that. I'm sure this is a game they really, really want to win. And he must be piqued by the Tevez thing. I mean, it's... Tevez, why is he so obsessed with being given respect? That's what I've never quite understood. I've always sort of quite liked him because he runs around a lot and he's got a nice, endearing, vaguely simian face. But all this stuff with the
good thing he doesn't want respect, Barney. Because
it's just people who ask for respect all the time. It's right. Very hard to respect them, isn't it?
He looks like Blanco, doesn't he, from Street Fighter 2, don't you think?
I'm not sure about that. The comparison was usually made with
Knick-Knack, the man with the golden gun. But yeah. I'm really looking forward to that return leg of that match. I think it's going to kick off. It could be a flurry of red cards and red and yellow cards and possibly some on-field violence, which would be, you know, let's face it, quite entertaining.
Mm.
Even though we're obliged to tot and
sit down. We hope there won't be anything like that, of course.
Did you notice that Gary Neville's comment in that came from a column he writes for the Times of Malta?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was quite fascinating.
Well, yeah, he has a business interest.
He's got a soccer academy. You can learn to play like Gary Neville on Malta.
Oh, really? Okay. I'm going to move on now to the FA Cup action from the weekend. Shawnee, I know you were very excited about that classic at White Hart Lane. Leeds and their 2-2 draw.
Yeah, it was one of the best FA Cup games I have seen in the last 5 years. I thought Leeds were brilliant. They really went at Spurs. after Spurs had dominated the opening sort of 20-25 minutes, and then Leeds came back and they really went for it, and it was a great game, and thoroughly looking forward to the replay.
They look as though they could live quite happily in the Premier League, this Leeds outfit.
Well, assume they keep the players, and it is obviously one thing, a cup competition other than the league, but certainly you'd think if they get promoted this season, they've got every chance, providing they keep the likes of Beckford.
Yeah, that Snodgrass looks a good player as well, doesn't he? They really need someone like that in that team, because it's very rigid and very strong defensively, but he seems to kind of pop up in those spaces, and he's quite creative. They like him a lot, at least. They think he's really good, the young Scot.
Did he turn down Barcelona, Snodgrass? Well, I heard that he was offered a trial there and he turned it down. Huh? There you go. Reading beat Burnley. The Royals' rise through the rounds continues. Stoke beat Arsenal in a game which maybe will have some bearing on the midweek match, you think, that Arsenal have coming up at Aston Villa. We might talk about that a bit later on then. Hey, Portsmouth, all sorts of protests before kick-off of their game against Sunderland, but a brace from John Utaka. Good value for money there, saw them through. And they're going to be taking on Southampton, Alan Pardew, Southampton. It's interesting, isn't it?
The South Coast Derby, the scummers against the scummers. They generally don't like each other, do they?
Indeed not.
Mm. Mm. But are you amazing news over the weekend about John Utaka's wages?
Yes.
Referring to £80,000 a week.
Mm.
He scored 6 league goals for them in 2.5 years.
Well, I know, he has been disappointing. Although I don't even know how much that is in Premier League terms now. I don't think it's actually all that high. What kind of percentage, what percentile would that put him in of Premier League earners?
I still think that puts him in the top 25%.
25, okay. High. Now, in other games coming up in the fifth round, Chelsea will take on the 2008 finalist Cardiff City. Wolves or Crystal Palace will be playing Aston Villa. Palace Revolution says, will the pod finally recognise the amazing achievement of Crystal Palace this season, of which Saturday's near victory against Wolves is just another example. Remember, our boys are not being paid, and this is 21st century football. They have to be bling bereft in South London. They're actually playing for the shirt. No signings for 18 months, etc., he says helpfully. Excellent stuff from that man, Neil Warnock. Now, that's probably enough on the FA Cup this weekend, because all sorts of other delights are standing by to be talked about, including a very, very big weekend in Italy and Spanish news and the like.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Big couple of days in Serie A, of course, where Juventus hosted Roma Saturday night and Sunday night brought the big Milan derby. Milan came into this game on a very good run of results. They'd won 3 on the trot, scoring loads of goals, conceding very few. The Nerazzurri, meanwhile, have been struggling against the likes of Siena and Bari. So Milan fans were getting their hopes up. But there was a very bad omen the week before when, I don't know if you saw this, this Italian reporter groped David Beckham going into a restaurant in Milan. Did you not see this?
What do you mean by grope?
Well, she attempted to cup his genitalia. So while he was being interviewed, she just put on a rubber glove and just stuck the hand in. And I don't know if we can believe her, but she went away shouting, or she was basically hauled off, but she was shouting, it's not as impressive as advertised, and he's lacking a little something in the box, which ironically is exactly how Milan turned out to be on Sunday night. Not nearly as impressive as we thought, as Inter took them apart, looked brilliant for 20 minutes. Then there was this bizarre sending off of Wesley Sneijder for sarcastically applauding the referee. I mean, a yellow card, 10 times out of 10 would be the correct response to that. But anyway, he was sent off. All sorts of comments about that by Inter afterwards, as you can imagine. But then Inter looked just as comfortable with 10 men, and indeed just as comfortable with 9, when they then had Lucio sent off at the end. 1-2-0, and really pretty much ended any discussion, I think, about them being the worthy title winners.
I was very, very disappointed with Milan, because they come with, you know, quite a billing. Ronaldinho had scored a hat-trick the week before. Beckham was said to be playing well. But they, you know, apart from a 15-minute spell early in the second half where they had a couple of half chances, they were just, they had no creativity. Mm. Basically, it was ping the ball out to Beckham, whip a cross in.
Half the time, they weren't even pinging it to Beckham. They were pinging it to Abate, who was sitting in more or less the same area of the field. So Beckham was a largely irrelevant presence, I thought, in the game.
But I think Sir Alex Ferguson, we're watching that ahead of the Champions League match between them, and thinking they've got no pace, not that much invention. Pirlo's not the player he was. Nor is Ronaldinho, nor is Beckham. And it's obviously you shouldn't judge too much on one game, but they didn't really offer very much. And Dida again had his usual comedy.
It was curious why he elected not to challenge that free kick which sailed in from Panda for the second. But Milan would say that they were missing a couple of key players. Nesta, who's been their player of the season, and Pato, who really does inject a lot of pace and invention, as Real Madrid found to their cost in the Champions League, but certainly brought them down a notch or two. Equally, though, while Sir Alex may have enjoyed the evening's viewing, perhaps Carlo Ancelotti will be slightly concerned at what this Inter might offer if Schneider manages to stay on the field against Chelsea in the Champions League.
Inter are definitely going to win Serie A.
Well, it doesn't definitely mean it, but this was their chance.
I mean, does anyone in Italy, are they anyone bothered about that? I mean,
yeah, but I think they'd be even more bothered if they didn't look like they were worthy winners. But yes, it is. I think a lot of people were hoping that Milan, who was 6 points behind with the game in hand, would bring it to three, and then you would have a real two-horse race. I mean, it's only halfway through the season. We've seen bigger leads than this brought back.
But they're going to win it, aren't they?
You would have to say it's extremely like Mourinho, who was in a kind of raptus in the second half. It was great. He went out onto the touchline and was coming to the going to the fans. Come on, come on, come on! With this bizarre kind of wildly passionate look in his eye, and the fans were loving it too. And Materazzi then at the end put on one of those, you know, those bank robber rubber masks. We had one of Berlusconi, which he danced around. That was a joyous moment. Anyway, Mourinho afterwards was saying, there's a strange smell about this game, referring to the Schneider sending off on one or two other decisions. He says, they don't want us to win the league too early, but we could have been even down to six players and still have won this match. That's true. Pretty Saban, the game would have been called off.
I was actually going to say that and then thought, no, don't be that nerdy, right, nitpicky, but Producer Ben.
Producer Ben came to our rescue. Thank you. In the meantime, I mentioned on Saturday night a slightly less entertaining game, a Juve's match with Roma. And, of course, another defeat for Juve. That's now their eighth in the last 11. Will Ciro Ferrara go?
Is he? He's like the Black Knight in... you know, it's all, oh, 'tis but a flesh wound, and oh, you're finished, you're dead, with having his limbs lopped off.
Yeah.
How long can they keep him in
well,
a job?
As long as they haven't been able to attract anybody else. I mean, there are people that they would like to bring in. Hiddink, everyone says it's to do with money, that they're not able to offer him enough money to tempt him in. There are various other solutions who we might see coming in, but I think the likeliest thing is that we'll still see Ciro on the bench for their next game, which is this Thursday in the Coppa Italia at the San Siro against Inter. Ouch. Roma, meanwhile, of course, delighted, especially Ranieri, to win that game, and came with a last-minute goal, a goal in injury time, a diving header by Giornana Risa. That'll sound familiar to Liverpool fans, of course. And the city of Rome, delighted, of course, and many, many fans dyeing their hair red in tribute to the Norwegian today. So there you go. That's very, very exciting, James. Thank you. Now, is it time to move on to Spain? Yes, sadly it is. Go on then. Let's give Sid Lowe his turn at the mic as we relive all the excitements of the past couple of days in the Liga.
Oh, hello.
Hello, Sid. How nice to have you, on the phone type thing.
Obviously, yes.
Yeah. Sid. There's lots to talk about. Ronaldo, although we don't want to always be talking about Ronaldo, but he just keeps doing stuff, doesn't he? He scored a brace and gets sent off in the win over Malaga.
He's been violently attacked, Cristiano Ronaldo, ooh, in the elbow by some poor man's face. the way the Spanish media are presenting it today is that Cristiano Ronaldo is the victim of the attack last night when he elbowed an opponent in the face. According to Marca, I love Marca's front cover. It says... he broke someone's nose, and then there's two very important words, sin querer, without meaning to.
Right.
It was an accident, and there's a little photo strip that says it was his desire to win that got the better of him, and that is why he turned round and cracked Matilia in the face with an elbow.
Are you suggesting that he did mean to do what he did?
It's impossible to know that for sure. Certainly what happened is, and in this sense, I kind of understand Ronaldo's argument, although it was a slightly odd one, and there's a few holes in it. But after the game, Cristiano Ronaldo came out and said, look, I was unlucky. But what happened was that Matilia was grabbing hold of him, and he was flailing his arms around, he said, to try and get free and carry on the play. Now, one of Ronaldo's arguments in this was that by playing in England for years, he's learned this. He said that in England, you know, they don't like players to stop. They don't like players to throw themselves on the floor. They don't like players to fake. So rather than doing all of these things, he decided the best thing to do was to try and fight off the man and carry on running. The thing is, of course, there's a difference between sort of flailing your arms around and actually swinging an elbow back into someone's face. And it's difficult to see exactly how deliberate it was. Cristiano Ronaldo said, "I was unlucky because my opponent was a small man. If he hadn't been, I'd have got him in the chest."
That's rotten luck, isn't it?
That would have been all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But anyway, Real get the win. El Wilio asking, we keep hearing about Ronaldo, what about their bargain basement signing Kaká? How's he fitting in?
Well, he's fitting in like a bargain basement signing. He's done relatively little so far. Most people are pretty disappointed with the way he's performed. He's been up and down at best. He's had occasional moments of skill, but he's had a couple of injuries, which I think have caused him problems. He hasn't really played in his natural position, which I also think has caused him problems. It's one of the reasons why people are getting a little bit on Manuel Pellegrini's back. But truth is that Kaká has not been very good.
Barcelona, anyway, maintained their position at the top of the table and reached the halfway point of the season without conceding a defeat so far. Well done to them for that.
Yeah, they're only the fifth side ever to do that. The last side was actually Real Sociedad back in 2003, and Real Sociedad didn't win the league. So I suppose there's a warning there. But Barcelona, I think the more amazing thing about this is not just that Barcelona haven't been beaten yet. In their 19 league games so far, they haven't once been behind.
That's impressive, isn't it? Atletico Madrid, their winning run ended at Getafe. What's all this about Getafe's ad campaign, Sid?
Well, I love this. Getafe over the last few years, I should probably put this into context. The context is that this really started with Atletico Madrid. Many years ago, Atletico Madrid made themselves famous with a series of advertising campaigns to try and encourage people to get season tickets. And the most famous one was this one of a boy in the back of a car driving along with dad in the rain. And he says to his dad, after a while, there's a pause. And he says, "Dad, why do we support Atletico?" And the pause in the advert ends. And the whole point is there's no reason. It's a feeling. It's about suffering. It's about, you know, doing it the hard way. And Getafe have started to latch onto this similar sort of idea in the last couple of years. And they've done quite a few adverts which have upset quite a few people, including one, which is a series of biblical scenes where basically they told God where to get off. And they were saying things like, you know, "I will not kill my son just because you tell me to. I will not be taking out a rib from my rib cage just because you say so." And then there's a picture, for example, of a man in a pair of jeans on a cross like Jesus. And the point of this whole advert is, "I won't do these things for you, Lord, because above you is my football team, Getafe." And then there was another one this year that was talking about last year, all the pressure and the tension of getting to the final day and trying to survive. And they're saying this tension had to come out some way. And their description, or more to the point, their kind of depiction of this tension coming out was to show a man in a dressing gown give birth to an egg. Then the egg cracks open and out jumps, and I kid you not, a bodybuilding dwarf. Quite what the significance of that is, I don't know.
That's really disturbing, Sid, actually. Can we move swiftly on to... But have their season ticket sales been doing really well as a result of this
bizarre, Hieronymus Boschian
vision?
Well, their season ticket sales have been okay this year, but there's a more important factor, and that is that they're starting to play great football, Getafe. They're worth watching. They're now just 4 points off the Champions League position. It's their best first half of the season ever at Getafe, and they look really good. I went to see them last night against Atletico Madrid, and they completely dominated from start to finish. Only won 1-0. But they look like a really, really good side.
Right, they're obviously giving the players the same stuff the creatives have been on. Sean?
Sid, this dwarf, he didn't look anything like AC Jimbo, did it?
Unless AC Jimbo walks around in a little leotard and kind of flexes his muscles. No, I don't think so.
Right.
Should he have done? Is AC Jimbo a well-known dwarf that comes out of eggs?
No.
What's happening here?
I don't know. I don't know. Let's just erase that part from our minds, if that's possible. Let's just finish off with a bit of transfer talk, if we may. Robinho was vetoed by the Barcelona dressing room. True or false?
Not entirely true. Not vetoed. Veto is a far too stronger word. I think voice concerns would be a better way of putting it. And I also think there's a more important factor in all this, which is that Barcelona, when the going got really, really tough at the back end of the year and the start of this year, turned it around and started getting results. And there was a message there, which was, well, do we really need this guy?
Right. Ruud van Nistelrooy, meantime, has gone to Hamburg.
Yes, he has. And this is, we were talking about this the other day, weren't we, that Spurs were concerned and pessimistic about him going to them. He's gone to Hamburg, as the Spanish media have pointed out. This is quite good for him because it's not far from home. It's only a 400-kilometre drive from his house in Holland. And he goes as a bit of a hero, actually. He was given a huge reception from the Santiago Bernabeu last night, was handed a trophy by Florentino Perez, which is perhaps a little two-faced, as Florentino was one of those that was relatively keen to get rid of him. But he goes as a guy who's got an extraordinary goal-scoring record, better in terms of goals per minutes than for example, Hugo Sanchez, better than Raul, better even than Ronaldo as a striker at Real Madrid. So he does go as a guy who's achieved an awful lot here and probably deserves to go as a bit of a hero.
Did he choose Hamburg over any offers from the Premier League, I wonder?
Well, this is the point. I mean, he had offers from Spurs and he had offers from Stoke, and he chose Hamburg over both of them.
Interesting. And am I right in thinking that Sergio Canales has now agreed unofficially terms with Real Madrid?
Keyword there, unofficially. Yes, it seems he has. Real Madrid have agreed a deal with him, but they still need to nail a deal with Racing Santander. The argument that really serves both Real Madrid well and Sergio Canales well is that they will agree to leave him at Santander for a couple of years. And I must say, I'm a little bit sad about all of this because I think it's a worrying trend in Spain that, and also not just in Spain, that you're not almost not allowed to not play for one of the big two. Real Madrid have bought him. I don't really see where he fits in with the players they've got right now. I wonder if this is going to be another player who ends just kind of on the pile at Madrid simply so that other clubs can't have him.
Yeah. Unlike Robert Snodgrass, Sid, who turned down any such fate by refusing a trial with Barcelona, so I'm told. Is that right?
I must confess, I don't know the first thing about Robert Snodgrass. Did you say his name was? I'm sure he's made that up, hasn't he?
He plays for Leeds. So,
okay.
Well, if you don't know, who will?
Producer Ben will know. Omniscient producer
Ben knows everything.
Yeah, who I suspect has fallen for a Wikipedia canard inserted by one of Robert's friends or something.
This does happen. Madrid do offer unlikely players trials.
This was Barcelona.
It was Barcelona.
Yeah.
I remember Madrid offering Jerome Thomas a trial ages ago when he was at QPR. Yeah, and it sort of turned his head and pretty much finished his career.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, part three, quick status update. Sean, how are you feeling?
Very well, thank you.
Barry, you've gone white there.
Have I?
Yeah, you've gone very pale indeed. Actually, a bit of pinkness has returned, but during, I think it was in the middle of one of Sean's metaphors, you actually blanched visibly. But
well, there was one stage where we were discussing eggs and dwarves
yes.
and Italian people dyeing their hair red, and I was beginning to think I was on an acid trip or something.
Right, yeah.
But it did actually happen, so
right.
Not just me.
Barney Roney.
I keep sort of slightly falling forward onto my microphone, then opening my eyes, and I'm still here.
Right, okay.
But that's about the only update I can
give. Excellent. Similar feelings experienced sans microphone, of course, by listeners, as we move on to the Africa Cup of Nations, which has been in the quarterfinal stage. Slightly disappointing tournament, but I think it's perhaps ratcheting up now that we get to the knockout stages, as we see Angola, the host, getting knocked out by Ghana. And, of course, Ivory Coast beaten by Algeria. Does this mean that Africa really doesn't have any powerhouse teams as we head into the first ever World Cup to be held in Africa? That's a question we could put to our man on the ground, quite literally, Jonathan Wilson there in Angola. Jonathan.
James, how are you doing?
How's it going, Jonathan?
Yeah, very well, thanks. How are you?
Very, very well. You sound bright and breezy, but I bet all sorts of bizarre things have been taking place there as you cover the Africa Cup of Nations.
I found some racist dogs. I don't know if that's possible, but the guest house I'm staying is two little white terriers, and anybody white who walks in, they trot over and they nuzzle against your legs and are very friendly. Anybody who black who walks in, they kind of straight over growling and snarling, and so it's all very odd.
That is odd, actually.
The ultimate reaction, exactly, you know, before you see the person arrive, you know whether they're European or local.
It's hard to know what to say to that, but let's turn our thoughts then to the Africa Cup of Nations. Ivory Coast, who for a lot of people were the big pre-tournament favourites, beaten by Algeria at the death.
Yeah, I mean, it was an extraordinary game that Ivory Coast, having, I mean, to be honest, taken a bit of a pounding for the last hour or so of the game. They'd totally dominated the first 15 minutes. Algeria slowly came into it, and you'd have said Algeria had much of that in the second half. Then a brilliant goal by Carter Keita in the final minute to make it 2-1 Ivory Coast. He thought, oh, that's it, it's all over. And then straight down the other end, the header from Majid Bagheera, 2-2. And then very early next to time, Amir Barata, the Blackpool player, got a header. She very similar header, sneaking the gap between Bamba, who's the left side of the two centre-backs, and Kenny, the left-back, which I think is a real problem for Ivory Coast. Now, I'm still not convinced Algeria are that good. I think what they've got is a lot of heart and a lot of character. I think they're capable of exploiting weaknesses. I think actually the thing from the last night's game was how poor Ivory Coast were. That they're fine if they can be kind of strong and fast and direct, but they've always lacked them to create, and they talk about this golden generation, but they're failing the last two Nations Cups, and they lost in the semi-final last time, and the final the year before that. They found it hard to break down teams to set up against them. So they didn't have that spark of imagination in the field. And that's still a problem that hasn't been solved. And we thought maybe Jovinho would do that, but he hasn't. But we also saw last night that they've got a huge problem defensively. So it's very simple ball back post causing all kinds of problems. So I think really, looking ahead to the World Cup, they've got big issues to solve.
Building to a climax, no doubt. Jonathan, thank you very much. You've been consoling yourself by compiling five things you learnt this weekend. I know you don't want to reveal the contents too much here, but I know that in your hot list is Stoke's something from the Stoke Arsenal game, the 3-1 victory for the Potters.
It was a victory against a properly weakened team.
What did you learn from that?
I learnt that I am pleased that Stoke beat Arsenal because I don't like weakened teams. And I thought it wasn't just a gamble. It was a bit disrespectful to Stoke. And Sol Campbell coming back to play a proper team who put you under proper pressure. I mean, he had a decent game, but he was definitely involved in two of the Stoke goals.
And right.
Arsenal haven't won a trophy for 4 years, and it seems a bit of a shame, frankly, to be putting out a weakened team.
Sean, I know this is an issue that burns strongly in your heart.
Well, apart from Barney's point, which is a very good one, that this is probably Arsenal's best chance with a trophy this season.
Really?
Particularly, well, Liverpool and United out of the Cup.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I think momentum is so important, and Wenger has form for fielding weakened sides and paying the consequences. In 2008, they went to Old Trafford in the FA Cup, filled out a weakened team, got hammered, and then went on a five-game run in the league. Well, they didn't win a game. They drew four in a row, then lost to Chelsea. And that cost them the title in 2008. Arguably, even in 2003-04, the Invincible season, in the semi-finals of the FA Cup, they played a weakened side against United, lost that, then they end up losing at Highbury to Chelsea in the second leg.
Just interesting, because Coltrane27 posting on a similar theme, pointing out that Bolton Wanderers in 05-06, Blackburn Rovers in 06-07, United, as you say, 07-08, and now Stoke City, they always seem to do this at this point of the FA Cup, field a weakened team and then go out.
I mean, I do take Wenger's point. He hasn't got a particularly strong squad, but you would have thought you would have picked one of Gallus or Vermaelen. You'd have thought you wouldn't have had a slightly more experienced side. The average age was under 22. I just think the Stoke players in that dressing room will look at that and think we can beat this lot. And admittedly, they beat them in the league last season as well. But do you think they'd give it more?
It's great that they beat them. It's great for English football. You put out a weakened team, you get beaten. It's a really good thing, and well done to Stoke.
And Stoke are a good team,
mm-hmm.
With some excellent players. They have a reputation, obviously, as sort of having their kind of agricultural style, but it works. And I mean,
I don't think their style is agricultural, though. I think they let the other team have the ball a lot, and then when they do attack, it's very swift, and then they do it well.
One thing I was wondering, Ricardo Fuller, who I've come to respect greatly as a player, I didn't really know much about him before this season, but I've seen him a good bit. How come he's allowed to wear earrings and doesn't have to put tape over them or remove them? Sorry to spring that one on you.
No, but it's a very, very, very good question.
You sound genuinely personally aggrieved about that.
Oh, no,
I've tried to wear earrings and people have told me.
I used to have an earring when I was young and stupid. And I looked like an idiot in my ear.
Oh, okay.
Was it a left or right one? Because, if you got it wrong, certain people thought that.
What?
Hinted at
the 21st century, Sean Ingle.
But it used to go.
Stop pressuring Barry.
No, but my brother had an earring in one ear, but I remember him telling me that you have to have it in the right earlobe or the left earlobe, otherwise it's a sign.
I think, yes, it's traditionally the left ear, but some people, if they have one in the right ear, others will suggest they're gay. I'm comfortable with my heterosexuality, but mine was in my left ear. Ricardo Fuller has won.
You're comfortable with your heterosexuality? Are you comfortable with your homosexuality? That's the question.
I'm comfortable with all parts of my.
Okay, sorry. You say that. Well, let's forget that. You just go with what you were saying, Barry, and I won't interrupt.
Oh no, I just thought that players weren't allowed to wear jewellery on the field.
Right.
But he always has an earring in each ear.
He certainly does.
I'd imagine they're probably quite expensive earrings as well.
Almost certainly.
And if I was possibly marking someone who had an earring, I might be tempted to rip it out when the referee wasn't looking.
Ay, caramba.
Blimey. If you ripped out Ricardo Fuller's earring, you've been a lot of...
Well, Ricardo Fuller, I would imagine, would be able to beat me to pulp with one hand tied behind his back. But surely you're asking for trouble.
But you'd never get away with it, though, because the TV cameras would pick it up.
Yeah, we're in the realm of deep, deep hypothesis here. Barry's not going to be playing against Ricardo Fuller anytime soon. Certainly not in any match that's televised.
I know, so a can very, I just... very weakened Arsenal team, you never know.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Aston Villa will be hosting Arsenal.
How would the Arsenal team have to be before I would be considered for selection?
As I say, Arsenal or Aston Villa in a midweek round of Premier League
strike.
I think you've made quite a good case, though, with your Ricardo Fuller earring pulling... evil.
Is that the Wenger way, though? I'm not sure.
I don't have anything against Ricardo Fuller, I hasten to add. It's just any player wearing an earring. Yes. I'm sure Ricardo Fuller is a lovely fella, but, you know, all's fair in love and war.
Barry would certainly toughen up the Arsenal midfield, wouldn't they?
Which on the weekend, which this midweek will be playing at Aston Villa, Sean. You think that this momentum loss is going to possibly weaken, crucially, their chances in not only this, but their run of very, 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 very big games.
Well, they play Villa on Wednesday, then United at the weekend, and they have Liverpool as well coming up.
And Chelsea
as well. But they have a fantastic record at Aston Villa. They haven't lost there since 1998. They will go there. I think they do need to win because Chelsea have a couple of games in hand. United, even though they're not playing well, are still winning. It's a crucial game.
United are top of the table, of course, after that whole extravaganza. So, yeah, very much. There's no way they can take their foot off the gas. Good. You appear to have come to the end of whatever we were saying about that game, so I'll move on to other matches. It's a big game then for Arsenal. They really need to continue that excellent run against the Villains. But the Villains, they've seemed to have found a run of form. Do you not fancy them to derail the Gunners' title chances? Barry Glendening?
No, I would expect Arsenal to win that game, but going on what's happened already this season, it's just very difficult to call them and you end up looking like a chump when you get things wrong.
That man, Milner, who looked brilliant again in the Cup, I noticed there was a big debate recently among our posters about whether he's actually any good. Some people saying he's fantastic, he's England's best midfielder.
I wouldn't get that far.
He's developing into something pretty special, though, to the untutored eye like mine.
Well, he's a big, strong young man, and he's really mentally there, and he's in very good form, and he puts everything into it. And he's obviously a really good team man. I mean, Fabio Capello loves him.
Mm.
But I don't think he scores enough goals to be England's best midfielder.
Oh, he's been scoring some quite
but he has scored some recently.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Good. Well, there you go. That's Aston Villa against Arsenal, which is probably the biggest game of the midweek round, although there's some other interesting ones. Particularly, one might argue, Chelsea at home to Birmingham. Now, Birmingham haven't been beaten in 3 months. It's an incredible run they've been on.
People say Birmingham don't get the credit they deserve, don't they?
Right.
But
unlike... Yeah, sorry.
Well, I mean, they haven't been beaten for a long time, but I mean, I've seen them a couple of times, and, you know, they're quite... boring. I mean, do they really deserve credit? I mean, they must be enjoying it. It's good for them. Mm-hmm. But do we have to give them credit for not being beaten?
Well, they were good at Everton at the weekend in the FA Cup.
Yeah, rather surprised about that. I mean, but maybe they don't get the credit they deserve.
Perhaps.
I'm sure Birmingham City will struggle on without the benefit of your approval.
I was just trying to give them some credit.
Right. Okay, but that 3 month unbeaten streak then may come to an end at Stamford Bridge, where of course Chelsea has such a fine record, and Didier Drogba returning post Ivory Coast's untimely exit from the Africa Cup of Nations. Barney, stop clicking that.
Sorry.
Thank you very much. What else we got this midweek? Bolton are hosting Burnley. Bit of a reunion there for Owen Carr. That'd be interesting. And
Brian Laws needs a win.
Yes.
He's getting knocked out of the cup in his second match in charge of Burnley. Was not great. So I'd say it's very important for Burnley to get a result in that game.
Right. Other matches midweek. Everton hosting Sunderland. Blackburn hosting Wigan. Spurs hosting Fulham. Liverpool will be facing a large banana skin in the shape of Wolverhampton Wanderers.
How large, Jimbo?
Reasonably size. Are you suggesting that... Rafa's men won't come unstuck in this fixture? I think there's a fair chance they will.
Why?
Because Wolves are on a good run. They have a decent record at home, and Liverpool don't have a good record anyway.
They never score any goals, Wolves. Well, they have a powder puff attack.
0-0, we'll see them.
This is quite intriguing, though, because Jimbo doesn't make many calls.
No, you always say that.
But
I always then
when you do, you tend to get them right.
No,
or you got one right.
I got one right once, and it's stuck in your head, yeah. Also, Portsmouth hosting West Ham. A bit of a six-pointer down there at the bottom end of the table. A bit of unrest before Pompey's win over Sunderland at the weekend.
Well, the fans now want Story out. Having praised them to the hilt a few months ago, I think they're righter now than they were back then.
Whereas West Ham, all those dark days are behind them now that they've got the Gold Sullivan Brady dream team and even a new name on the horizon, West Ham Olympic. Was she having a laugh when she suggested that?
Well, I hope so. I think it's a ridiculous idea.
Is it? West Ham Olympic?
Yes.
There's a certain ring to it, don't you think?
But there's not really any need for it. Is there a need to change it?
Well, if they're moving to the Olympic Stadium, I think their concession to getting a brand new stadium given to them for free largely would be to say, okay, we'll call ourselves West Ham Olympic. That was the subtext to her comments, I thought.
See, Scott Murray came up with a good name for them in the Fiver. He called them that because of the line of work that Sullivan and Gold are in. He's referring to them as wrist ham. So if they're going to change to anything, I think that would be a far more appropriate title.
And on that very high note, we come to the end of Football Weekly. Exciting games to look forward to. We'll be reporting on how they went on Thursday in Football Weekly Extra. Right now, though, thank you very much, Ben, for the simple task of putting all that together. Barney Rone for soldiering through.
Thanks.
Barry Glendening for hanging tough.
Yep.
And John Ingle as well. A rock. A cheers, rock, Sean. And thanks, listeners. We'll be back on Thursday.
Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.